and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show. This is the Stephanie Miller Program. Good morning. I am John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all morning long with you, because she be illin'. If you were listening to the show last week, you heard Steph come down with something sounding like plutonium in her throat.
Yes.
And, in fact, yes, which she does have bronchitis. And I'm joined, as always, by the ever able and brilliant Chris Lavoie.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good
and
morning.
The ever able and punctual Jim Ward.
Jim Ward is here.
And
good morning, gentlemen.
I also have a cold, sore throat, and phlegm, and all that stuff, but no plutonium because I haven't been swimming in the ocean lately.
Ah, well, it's a pleasure to be with you guys. Although I'm not actually with you, we should let the folks out there in Stephland know that today we are doing the unthinkable high wire transcontinental broadcast. I'm in New York.
That's right.
And Los Mooks are in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
Yes. So it's still dark there, but it's not all rain and snow and as cold as the motherly love of Barbara Bush. Good morning.
Although it is cold this morning. It was in the 30s.
When 34.
34.
From my house, yeah.
Ooh, 34. What, it really
it's
went down
nearly
to 34?
Freezing.
Did
yeah.
you try to find a kid to shovel your driveway?
I had
wow.
to put on a jacket.
Oh,
yeah, I heard
no.
this afternoon it might go from pleasant to mild in L.A., so be careful. Take care of yourselves.
We've had a little bit of a cold stretch here.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I've heard, actually. That's what I've heard. I miss those winters in L.A.
I think the last time it snowed in L.A. was 1944 at UCLA.
Really?
Yes.
It snows
there
up in the hills.
That's
it snows
true.
Up by the Grapevine all
yes.
the time.
Oh,
but, yeah.
The Grapevine was closed this past weekend.
I love living in L.A., and I love those frosty winter days when you have to look outside and say, oh, I can wear a sweater and take it off by lunchtime.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's how you guys deal with that Jack London short story that is living in L.A. is so beyond me.
Yeah.
Friends, we have a lot. A
I
lot.
Never had to bite a wolf, though. That hasn't happened yet.
Well, it depends on how bad you want to get into that frat. We have a lot to cover today. So much is going on. Of course, last week, the world suffered a terrible loss, a very sad passing. You know, when you grow up thinking that you know, admiring things and people and thinking life will always be the same and you can always lose something so important to you. And of course, the world right now is reeling from a death last week. Of course, I'm talking about The Sound of Music, something that led the world for years and was a shining light and was murdered.
I
Vampire Bill just let the teeth come out whenever the kids sang
yeah.
in anger. It would have worked better for me. But
the hills are alive with the sound of
howdy, y'all.
You know what? She was not the worst performance in that show.
Oh.
I want to put that on the record. I watched it. And people were very mean to Carrie Underwood. Not as mean as Carrie Underwood was for mocking Americans without health insurance on the Country Music
yeah.
Awards. Not quite as mean as she was to people, she being a millionaire who will never have to worry about health care. But they were still pretty mean. And so, of course, the real loss was of Nelson Mandela.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the themes of today's show, I think, should be that fans of Reagan who look up to Mandela are like fans of Gargamel who look up to Smurfs.
Yeah.
There have been articles all weekend about how Reagan was a hero in the battle against apartheid.
No.
I'm sure you guys touched on this last week, but over the weekend it was just incredible to see the airborne amnesia virus affect all of our Republican loved ones.
Yeah.
When you think of all the, and I'm not just talking about Reagan and Cheney, they're getting all the hype. And, of course, Jerry Falwell, who told people to go out and buy Cougarans to support the South African government.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not forget Grover Norquist. He fought very hard against any kind of sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't know, when you're talking about this with your coworkers today, with that right-wing coworker who calls Reagan a civil rights hero, the actual facts are that our Congress was trying to get sanctions against the apartheid South African government. Ronald Reagan vetoed that, and Congress had to override his veto.
Yeah.
So when you hear about Reagan imposing sanctions on South Africa, it was just like Martin Luther King's birthday. He opposed it, and
mm-hmm.
they overrode his veto,
yep.
and he was forced to do it. And it's important to remember that, because a lot of these guys are still in Congress, and one of their daughters is running for Senate in Wyoming.
And I believe the Afrikaans pronunciation is actually apartheid, which is appropriate, because it rhymes
mm-hmm.
with
yes.
that other word.
Exactly. It is apartheid. It is somewhat similar to what our Latino friends have to deal with in Arizona, because they have to carry papers at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's too harsh a word to use. And Mandela was called a communist. He was called a terrorist. For me, I never got to meet Mr. Mandela, but I did work as a marshal on the welcoming committee when he came to the States back in 1990. I was like the youngest and palest person on the entire thing, but I got to work the Yankee Stadium rally. And
that is really cool.
It was really, really cool. I was young. I was living in a dorm, and I saw a sign about it, and I wanted to be a part of it. And it was really, a part of history. And I think that I'm glad that this film is coming out, because it looks like an excellent film. Idris Elba plays Mandela in the movie. And it looks like it'll be great for people who weren't alive back then to get a sense of, what this man's struggle was. And it'll also give you a sense of how politically active people really were back in the 80s, because the 80s is kind of thought of as a very shallow time. But it was because of, Nelson Mandela's struggle and apartheid that a whole bunch of artists, from Sting to U2 to Peter Gabriel to Paul Simon, all got very politicized.
I ain't gonna play Sun City.
Yes, little Steven Van Zandt with that song, which had Dylan and Springsteen on it. And, I remember as a kid in the 80s seeing advertisements for Jostens Class rings that promoted the fact that Jostens refused to use any South African gold.
Wow.
There were so many great, political movements in the 80s, and they've kind of been forgotten by people now. And Nelson Mandela is a good reminder that although it seemed like a shallow decade of cocaine and hair gel, there were a lot of really committed people out there trying to make the world a better place.
Yep.
And the president and the first lady will be traveling to South Africa to attend the memorial service for the late President Mandela on Tuesday, part of a week of official observances that will culminate in the funeral a week from Sunday. And, it's very sad. It wasn't, unforeseen. We thought he was going last summer. He was 95, so it's not a huge shock. But there is a number of sound bites I'd like to play during the show. But also, today we're also going to be talking about the Obamacare wars. We're going to be talking about the war on Christmas. We're going to be talking about the Grammy nominations. And because I need someone to tell me who the artists are. And No. It's actually a lot of good music.
Grandpa doesn't get what the kids are listening to nowadays.
No. There's a lot of good. I know all the music.
I know.
It's always like it's just so reward sales and not quality, and it makes me crazy.
I think it's all designed to get viewers to the Grammys.
It's designed to get viewers to the Grammys, and it's also designed to help a deeply struggling record industry.
Yeah.
Because, no one's buying music anymore. Everyone's burning it for free online or ripping it off online, and that's why artists have to have, several bands and be touring all the time. Jack White, this is actually true, Jack White is a member of 47 different bands.
Is he?
He does four shows a night with three different bands, and that's how he has to make a living for Third Man Records. So. And also, the unemployment rate is down to 7%.
That's right.
The lowest it has been since 2008
when all this began.
Yep. Thanks, Obama. Since all this began under Bush. There I go, blaming Bush for stuff Bush did.
That's right.
Right. And as well as, things were looking pretty good. So third quarter GDP up 3.6%. So it's looking like the economy is really turning around in many ways, which will infuriate Republicans who want to call themselves patriots. Anyway, how was your weekend, Chris and Jim?
It was good. I'll tell you what we did yesterday. We are surveying Steph's house to put a studio in there.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, as a lot of people know, our station here in Los Angeles is changing format. They've given us a great run for 9 years here, but we are moving on to bigger and better things and building a studio in Steph's house.
I guess we're not taking Captain America's underpants with us.
No.
No, okay.
No.
Wow. That's going to be amazing. So right there in the mini mansion, so you'll get like everything from the celebrities waking up from the previous night's drunken revelry to those giant Mastodon dogs of hers walking into the shot.
Max and Fred are going to make appearances on the show.
That's going to be so fun. For those who haven't seen Steph's home,
which is probably most of you out there.
Yes, it's a beautiful house and fantastic. Wow, it's going to be so exciting seeing that happen. And as well as to see, again, the drunken celebrities pass that on our couch.
Exactly.
Only in several bedrooms.
Yeah, and it's going to be all on TV, too, because we're going to be on Free Speech TV after the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. And we have a fundraiser going on. It's via Indiegogo because they're non-commercial. They, they don't play commercials or anything like that. So they depend on your donations. And so we're doing a fundraiser. Just go to stephaniemiller.com or Stephanie Miller's Facebook page to find out how. now. And depending on how much you give to Free Speech TV, you'll get some really awesome Steph swag.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and all of it is at the link that you'll find at stephaniemiller.com and at Stephanie Miller's Facebook page.
Very, very, very cool. And as always, we're taking your calls all morning. The number is 1-800-STEPH-1-2. And I did a promo for Free Speech TV for the Stephanie Miller Show.
You did.
So I'm very excited to see that.
And I believe it is up on the Indiegogo page. That's what I've been told.
Yes. Yes. Well, the guy who's trying to kill her for the insurance money dragged me down to do a promo when he was in New York.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
Yes. So reluctantly, at gunpoint, I promoted your work. But I'm excited about it. You know, Free Speech TV is a great place to catch, you know, all the shows that make you the smartest, most moral, and most sexy person at the water cooler. And,
exactly.
You know, I go there for Amy Goodman, for Tom Hartman.
Yep.
You know, and all the great programming. So I'm excited to be a part of that and to be a disembodied voice on Free Speech TV.
Yep. And yeah. it's gonna give us a presence on Dish and DirecTV, and they also have some awesome streaming capabilities
right.
on the web, and on
get it on your iPad.
Exactly. Yeah, get it on your iPad, and also they're on if you have a Roku box, there's a Free Speech app that you can watch on your TV. Boom.
Hmm.
Easy as pie.
Eric tweets me that the media will turn Hillary Clinton attending Nelson Mandela's funeral into her running for president. Eric, the media will do anything to get you to pay attention to the media, and one of those things is saying the words Hillary and Clinton in the same sentence, mm-hmm. because it provokes irrational responses of exuberance or rage from people across the political spectrum. And people hate her way too much, and that's good for ratings, much like saying Sarah Palin's good for ratings to some folks. And I think that, you know, no matter what Hillary Clinton does, people will say it's a sign she's running for president in 2 years, which she is. And the job is hers. And it's really going to be the most fun presidential election of our lifetime because the Republicans are going to break out, the heavy hitter Republicans coming in. Is that fair to say, Chris? I mean, last time it was the clown car, right? It was Bachman and,
By all accounts, it's going to be a clown car again.
But
what heavy hitters do they have?
The heaviest hitters they've got. First off, Chris Christie. Who is not a moderate.
He is the heaviest.
Now. he is
That's not what you meant.
That's not what I meant at all. No, I would never make Chris Christie fat jokes. That would be wrong to do. He's a large man, but I wouldn't do that.
Okay.
And I give the Chris Christie Barack Obama alliance a 10. And not just because they resemble that number when standing side by side. But Chris Christie, I think, is by far the best public speaker. I would say to you he's even a better public speaker than Mrs. Clinton. I would even say to you that Chris Christie could beat Mrs. Clinton in a general election. But the Tea Party's going to make sure that never happens.
Right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Chris, remember when you didn't hate people on medical marijuana? Remember when you didn't hate Muslims? Well, meet the Tea Party.
Exactly. We should take a break here.
Fantastic. Right. We'll be taking your calls when we return at 1-800-STEPH-1-2. We're going to be discussing the potential field for 2016. I want to get a complete list because I think I know who their best candidate is, and very few people agree with me. We'll be having great guests from the Rude Pundit to Congressman Adam Schiff and lots of inappropriate sexual humor. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. Bless you for joining us. We'll be right back right after this.
There's a tea party in her pants, and you're invited. Call now, 1-800-STEPH-1-2. Stephanie Miller.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show, coming to you live from New York and Los Angeles this morning. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in the frigid Arctic tundra that used to be New York, joined by the brilliant Jim Ward and Chris Lavoie in the L.A. Bureau. Good morning, gents.
Hiya.
Great to be with you. Jim, how was your weekend?
Well, my brother-in-law was visiting and slept on the couch, and I had a good time watching rock and roll DVDs.
Oh, that's pretty hot.
You kids with your rock and roll 8-track tapes.
No,
what's
no,
the world coming
watching,
to?
Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, the Chuck Berry.
Oh, that's a great movie with Keith Richards, and everyone's in that movie.
Yeah, it's a lot of
terrific
fun.
Film. I hosted that on a VH1 on the Rock and Roll Picture Show many moons ago. Yeah, I spent the last 2 weeks down south moving my mom and guest hosting Bill Press, and this week I'm doing the Katie Couric Show and Wendy Williams and Ed Schultz But I spent the entire weekend just trying to deal with a baby. And babies are horrible people. That's what I learned. They're awful people. They are miserable bastard people. They manipulate you.
They're so self-absorbed.
They're self-absorbed. They don't care about your feelings or your needs at all. And they will manipulate you and hurt you and smack you and spit on you. And you think that's love. So you keep it. They're babies are Chris Brown, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And we are all Rihanna. And they are terrible. Terrible little crib lizards. And I was supposed to do the Katie Couric show last week, and they you know, and I was nervous because they do a lot of hard news stories on that show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a terrific show, and they wanted to talk about the top baby names.
Really?
For the year. Yes, the top baby names for 2013, which it turns out are Jackson for boys.
Okay.
And Emily for girls.
Huh.
So I wanted to let Rush Limbaugh know not to worry. The white people are still in charge.
Yeah.
And
you know, but your baby is in Mike Tyson's weight division, so.
That's true. I was reading the list of the top baby names, and it's all like Aiden, Isabel, and Zoe. And I'm like, wow, man, not a lot of LaQuishas on this list.
No.
You're okay, white people. You are set. Not a Shaniqua to be had.
No.
And I was trying to think of what would be the worst possible thing you could name a baby. You know, not the most popular name. What's the least popular baby name? And I think I found it. It's Adolf Judas Osama Kardashian.
I like
it. If you want something no one else is going to pick in your kid's class, Adolf Judas Osama Kardashian.
That would be it.
That's
Harpo
the one.
Marx's real name was Adolf. It was just another name in the
1890s. Harpo Marx's real name was Adolf,
yep.
Yes, and Groucho's was Julius.
Mm-hmm. And Leonard is Chico. It's Chico, pronounced Chico because he's a chicken chaser, according to Groucho.
Zeppo was Leonard.
Zeppo was Leonard?
I could be wrong. No, you know, whatever.
I think Zeppo's real name was Zeppo.
And it didn't help the film career.
No, it didn't.
Although Zeppo left voluntarily, and then when he divorced his wife, she married Sinatra. So how's that for in-laws?
Oof.
Yes, and I believe she's still with us, too. So Michael is calling us from Austin. Michael, good morning. You are
Michael
on the...
is no longer there, unfortunately.
I'm sorry, did I say Michael from Austin? I meant Jason from D.C. is calling us. And Jason, you're on the increasingly incoherent Stephanie Miller show. Good morning.
Hey, Jason.
You with us? Jason,
okay.
The family Von Trapp.
Oh, there he is. Hi, Jason.
Hey, I wanted to talk about the fact that the incomes in the United States over the last 5 years, median household income has been going down. The only people who have been getting rich or been going back to where they were before are basically the top 4%.
Right.
And this is all done by quantitative easing. And when mm-hmm. you go, oh, the economy's getting better, you don't want to know what quantitative easing works out to be per person? $260 a month, a car payment. So if you're spending this much money that's printed out of nothing, okay, that's just like racking up money on a credit card bill that mm-hmm. eventually is going to have to be paid for. So don't everybody pretending that things are getting better. It's not getting better.
No, but I'm curious why you – well, it's getting better than it was last month. But, yes, I agree with you. And the unemployment numbers are actually much higher than we're being given if you count how bad unemployment really is and those who've given up looking for work.
But
I'm curious why you say the last 5 years.
I'm
curious why you say the last 5 years this has been happening because it's actually been going on a bit longer than that.
Because this is when the quantitative easing program began that everybody was supposed to think was going to be some be-all and end-all to save the economy. Okay, what you needed to do is just make sure that the insolvent banks stayed in, from taking the whole system down. But the two big to fail banks have actually gotten bigger.
They have.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, so when we're sitting here, it's like a whitewash job that people don't want to understand that for the average person, the 96% of the population that makes their money from labor, their mm-hmm. income has been progressively going down at least for the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm. It's very true.
And there are various points where it goes higher and lower, but the key to this all is the manipulation of the money standard. Because what happens is the ability of the rich to leverage money is where they gain their money from. It's not from the fact that they're a dentist and they make $300,000 or $400,000 a year. It's the fact mm-hmm. that they can leverage money.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we're caught in a downturn.
Well, this is true, so let me ask you the million-dollar question. What would you do on a policy level to begin reversing this slide towards inequality? If you could hang on through the break, we'll ask you when we come back.
Elizabeth Warren for president.
Yes.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
We've got
right
the
back.
Ruth Pundit coming up next, too.
We'll be right back. always have such messed up Christmases?
Yeah, Stephanie Miller. And now you do too.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fuglesang, filling in for the great lady all morning long, taking all y'all's calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. And before we get to Root Pundit, I want to really quickly finish, because we ran out of time, with Jason in D.C. Jason, are you there?
I'm still here.
I want to thank you for bringing up quantitative easing and the insolvent banks, and for, you know, reminding us that, yes, while the numbers are looking better in, you know, the real world, they're not actually as good as we'd like them to be.
Yes.
And this has been going on for quite a while. But I wanted to ask you, you did a great job of breaking down, you know, what's wrong with the ratings. I want to ask you, what, on a policy level, do you think the president could do at this point to begin improving these numbers for real?
This is the problem where you run into a debt trap. And essentially it works like this. You can take on higher and higher amounts of debt, just like you can as an individual. And then you reach a point where if you're not careful, you cross over and you risk the possibility of bringing down your entire system, because the debt payments you'll make will be larger than what your income is.
Well, right. So we understand that, but there's no other options available to the president at this point, because Congress is blocking anything else he tries to do.
Absolutely.
No. What you have to do is you actually have to fundamentally prioritize things and actually have to start cutting back. Because if you don't, if interest rates just go back to where they were in 2006, okay, the interest payments on the debt will double. Okay.
But Congress controls the purse strings. They're the only ones who can cut back.
And who's the one that sets the budget?
Right, but Congress has to approve the budget. Congress
approving a budget that increases the debt load is what's getting us into the problem. So if I'm your banker, at a certain point I'm going to cut you off. We have to prioritize. If we're going to pay Social Security, if we're going to pay
course.
The existing,
and
we can't be adding more things onto the pile.
And the banks have every right to cut us off, because what have we ever done for them? But my question to you is, what could the president do on a policy level beyond cutting spending?
Right.
I mean, I'm guessing that you don't favor any kind of increase in revenues, right?
Now, look, this is the way it's going to have to work. Look, if we're sitting here right now and we have more people on disability than the population of Greece, we have more people unemployed than the population of Spain. First, can you guys admit that things are getting worse for 97% of the population over the last 5 years?
No.
Because that's so the fact that all of these numbers have been getting worse for 96% of the population. The only people that it's getting better for is the people that are paying record prices for artwork and penthouses and diamonds. Do you understand the difference? It's what's going on. It's not people. So
yes, but do you support
this
any
whole
kind of
thing began.
Do you support anything to generate revenue by having higher taxes on the 1% or even on the 0.01% who could really afford to pay more?
Okay. Yeah, I would be in favor of some type of a consumption tax. Okay, that's more like a national sales tax.
Oh God!
But here,
everyone pays, not who could easily afford to pay more.
Yeah, we got
to it. Yeah, okay, thank you. You know, it's just
that's
like,
who should
nice
bring up
try.
The national sales. It's like, okay.
Well, look, I mean, at least one of them is talking about how the upper. At least they're talking about it. You know, at least he's playing dumb about the solution.
Yeah.
At least he's getting more honest.
Right.
If you can get more conservatives talking about the fact that the deck is rigged and that the rich have gotten much richer and the middle class is now the top of the bottom, that's at least the beginning of a dialogue. But again, you know, great. Everyone's
talking about
more.
National sales tax.
You know what would be great? A flat tax. And then we can get the teachers' unions, and that'll take care of the disparity between rich and poor. It's not even the fact of income inequality, folks. Every society has income inequality. You could have a purely communist society, but it would never work. You'd never have
the
income inequality.
You know what would also be great? The Root Pundit.
Leaf of it.
Wow.
Root Pundit.
How about that?
Pundit. I think I sprained my neck on that segment.
This would be the Root Pundit. Lee Papa. Good morning, sir. It's John Fuglesang here filling in for Steph.
What? Whoa, I thought Stephanie finally took the wrong hormones or something.
If she did, she would look like K.D. Lang, because that's me this morning. How are you, Rude? Welcome to the show.
I'm good. Good to hear from you, John. It's been a while.
It's been quite a while. I've been on the road making a movie for PBS for the past couple of months, and it's great to be back back in one place, and I'm thrilled to have you here. We were discussing this morning the great tragedy that the world faced last week, a great loss to all of us who care about dignity and freedom, and that's, of course, the death of The Sound of Music, which was very sad. But also we lost Nelson Mandela. And I was telling the guys how, as a kid, he was one of my heroes. I worked on the welcoming committee as a marshal when he came to the States back in 1990. I think the most entertaining part of this, and we touched on it earlier, was seeing our right-wing friends who did everything they could to support the apartheid regime of P.W. Botha falling over each other in worship of President Mandela. Were you surprised by that, Rood?
I was. I was part of, when I was in college, I was part of the divestment movement at my college. And took part in a lot of in protests and was really into the anti-apartheid movement that ended up spurring Congress to some kind of action, to the point where Mandela ended up thanking college students in the United States for their mm-hmm. support, because it was one of the things that helped move Congress to overturn Reagan's veto of sanctions on the white regime in South Africa. So it's great seeing all of these people who would normally have condemned the communist criminal Mandela coming out now and now in retrospect say, well, we thought he was a communist, but he wasn't that bad of a communist.
So like,
is really where this is going.
You mean like Stephanie, who voted for Reagan? I like to point that out every
well actually, when he got out of prison, he turned out to not be a communist at all.
Right. Mm-hmm. Of course.
In fact, if you want to criticize Mandela, and I know we're not supposed to right now, but you know, he could have instituted a few more socialist reforms. Mm-hmm. And done some more good for all of the people that are still in poverty in South Africa. But as a symbol of overcoming oppression, these are few and far between now, thank goodness. And here's one of the big ones.
Well, they're few and far between. However, the ones who supported South Africa's acolytes are still very much with us. I mean, Mr. Falwell, you know, Jerry Falwell went so far as to call Bishop Tutu a phony and encourage Americans to invest in Cougarons. That's mm-hmm. how much he supported apartheid. Pat Robertson,
oh, yeah.
Of course. Grover Norquist, as a young troll, was doing everything he could to oppose American sanctions. President Reagan, Dick Cheney, he was classified a terrorist.
Yep.
And again, we have to point out, it was Republican and Democratic congressmen together who enacted this sanctions package. Reagan vetoed it. It was Republicans and Democrats together who overrode Ronald Reagan's, here it comes, racist veto
mm-hmm.
of the
exactly.
sanctions package.
So how does Matt Damon fit into all of this?
Ha!
Never mind.
How does Matt Damon fit this?
The rugby movie. Yes.
Oh, well, in that case, yes. In that case, Mandela realized...
Well, you see, once you got Michael Caine involved, then you can deal everything.
And now Michael Caine was in a different movie altogether.
He slowed the movie down.
Oh, my God.
Michael Caine did not slow the movie down. He was in a different movie with Sidney Poitier. Michael Caine did Mandela and De Klerk on Showtime.
You know what's really... You know what's really funny about this is I don't know if you're actually dueling Michael Caine or doing a version of Steve Coogan's The Trip dueling Michael Caine.
Yeah. A 15-year-old girl. 15-year-old girl she was. No, we're doing... Just so you know, Michael Caine played De Klerk in a Showtime movie with Sidney Poitier playing Mandela. Hmm. Morgan Freeman played Mandela excellently, I might add, got an Oscar nomination in Clint Eastwood's movie Invictus. And they're now making Invictus 2, where a black American president tries to bring America together by getting black folks to care about NASCAR. It's the same theme of Invictus.
Yes, same thing.
Rude, I got to ask, were you surprised to see Ted Cruz post a memorial of well wishes to Mandela, and even more surprised to see the seething resentment that came from Ted Cruz followers who dishonestly called President Mandela a mass murderer of white people and a communist?
Yes. No, I wasn't surprised to see Cruz, just say sort of a bland, he really stood for freedom, sad he died thing on his Facebook mm-hmm. page. I love that we're reaching sort of that maximum douchebaggery where people feel free to say anything they want on Facebook, and now it's actually having some kind of political impact beyond, it's as if they're bullying Mandela in death.
Yeah.
It's like Mandela's a high school girl who had sex with the wrong football player. and everybody's just piling on now because Mandela can't do anything about it.
Yeah, it's really true. Well, not that Mandela would care what ignorant Americans say, and he was never afraid of that. He spoke out quite forcefully and powerfully against the Iraq invasion, and it's all the more impressive.
Right, and when George W. Bush was in South Africa, he pointedly did not go meet with Mandela because of Mandela's, you know, really strong condemnation of the Iraq War.
You know, what's interesting is 24 lawmakers are going to President Mandela's funeral, not on Air Force One. They're flying via military air. Only two of them, of the 24, are Republican. One is Congressman Schock, and one is Senator Ted Cruz. Only one Republican senator is going to the funeral. I guess because a lot of them know that going to a Mandela funeral won't help them with votes the next time around.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're seeing that. I mean, how many, what was it? It was Newt Gingrich, actually, who, give him credit, he did vote to override Reagan's veto back in 86. It was Gingrich even saying how shocked he was at the, how strong the comments were against Mandela. And I just wanted to say, who were you hanging around with in 86 that this is a surprise to you? You know, if this is what goes around, I wrote last week about I was sitting when the day Mandela was released in 1990, I was sitting with my partner's, father, watching the coverage, and the father turns and says, "That man is a communist and a criminal, and he should never get out of jail."
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And then, you know, then the room was cleared, and I, who had been giving speeches at my college about Mandela and South Africa and apartheid, and had been trying to get my college to divest from South Africa, I never got invited back. Let me just put it that way.
Wow. Wow.
To the house. Yeah. It was.
Well,
it's
hard to imagine such a society. I think young people growing up today would have a really hard time imagining a country where a tiny white minority controlled everything, had all the power, and where the overwhelmingly black majority were second-class citizens, systematically and institutionally kept in poverty, had to show their papers when they walked down the street if anyone asked. And, I mean, it's so beyond segregation, as bad as what we had in the 1960s here and in the 50s in America, it so surpassed it. And it really was the conscience of the world coming together. And, you know, rock stars get a lot of credit for it because rock and roll proved itself very useful in the 80s. Everyone from Bono to Sting did a lot of work that might seem silly now, but it turned a lot of young people on to what was actually happening. Young people take artists more seriously than they take politicians, and often with good reason. So, you know, it was really one of the proudest moments for the human race when this overwhelming pressure forced a moral evolution in South Africa.
And let's also give credit, you know, I would actually peg one of the key moments in the consciousness about South Africa to be Stevie Wonder giving a speech at the Oscars and dedicating early 1985, he dedicates the Oscar to Nelson Mandela.
Mm-hmm.
And it was shortly after that the divestment movement started. So
From a Johannesburg prison cell, you could hear Mandela say, "Oh man, for the Oscar, for I just called to say I love you." So that was
right.
That was a bit disappointing. Now, it is worth noting that when Mr. Mandela went to prison, he was not an advocate of nonviolence. Okay, that's why they got him. But over his 27 years in prison, he became a very astute disciple of Gandhi and Jesus and Thoreau, and when he came out, and Dr. King. And when he came out, he was completely committed to the principles of nonviolence.
However, he would not. They wanted the ANC to renounce violence. And he said they would not renounce violence unless the South African government renounced violence. This was prior to the end of apartheid. This was during his time in prison. So,
Rude, can you hang out for another segment?
Sure, you bet.
Awesome.
Fantastic, because I want you to trash some Republicans when we come back. It's the Rude Pundit, and we are on the Stephanie Miller Show, taking your calls at 800-STEP-1-2. We'll be right back.
Ooh, what a lovely program.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
We'll be right back.
Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
Well, today she's not there to remind me.
That's a pretty seamless edit, by the way. I want to compliment you on that.
Well, thank you.
Sounds great. Good morning. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for the great lady all morning, taking all y'all's calls at 800-STEPH-1-2. That's 800-STEPH-1-2. We are joined on the line by the great Rude pundit, Lee Papa. Rude, before we get back to you and talk about Nelson Mandela, I have to really quickly let people know something very important is about to happen.
Uh-oh.
This coming Saturday in the great city of Seattle.
In a world with Washington gridlock, Tea Party obstruction, economic chaos.
I'm sick of it, I'm sick of it.
There's only one way to get into the holiday spirit.
Stephanie Miller.
Let's kick back and get into the spirit.
Just in time for the holidays, the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour is coming to Seattle. On Saturday, December 14th, John Fugelsang, Hal Sparks, and your favorite progressive radio star, Stephanie Miller, will perform live at the Paramount Theater in Seattle, Washington. Tickets are available at stgpresents.org. Come celebrate Prisma Chana Stefa Kwanzaa.
The war on Christmas was worse than you thought.
That's the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour, December 14th at the Paramount Theater. Get your tickets now. Go to stgpresents.org.
This is going to be a really amazing show. We will be joined on stage by Mr. Dan Savage. So you come on down, you'll get Steph, you'll get Hal, you'll get me. I'm bringing all new material. I can't wait to do a whole new set. We had a great time in Seattle last year.
You'll get Jim.
What's that?
You'll get Jim.
I'm going to be there.
And Jim's going to be
not
there.
Not sure
Rocky
what I'm
Mountain
do,
Mike's going to be there. Well, we got to talk, Jim. You're calling me today, right? We're catching up. And Dan Savage, of course, will be one of our special guests. So it's going to be a huge party. Come on down. You can be in Seattle and drink and revel with the same sane people that think the way you do. And who knows what kind of disease you could bring home with you. So it's this Saturday night. I'm thrilled, as I'm thrilled to have the Rude Pundit back on the air. And Rude, it's great to have you here. And I wanted to ask you really quickly, do you think that, you know, Nelson Mandela's legacy will be remembered by Americans, or is apartheid something that we've already kind of forgotten about in this country?
I think apartheid's probably something that we're already forgetting about. You know, I don't think it's something that, it's one of those things that if you talk to young people and you tell them that this was something that was going on in a country, in a country in the late 20th century, they're stunned. They don't understand. I'm sure mm-hmm. that, our short-term memory, you know, if we can't make a meme out of it, we certainly can't remember it.
Well, the good thing is that I'm starting an office pool right now. You guys are welcome to pitch in to see how long it's going to be before Glenn Beck starts explaining to his listeners how Nelson Mandela was really a conservative icon. Because we know that's right?
That hasn't already happened. I mean, last week I actually tweeted how long before somebody compares Obamacare to apartheid. And like within seconds, Rick Santorum had compared Obamacare to apartheid. It's like
he really
He really did it.
He really compared bringing health care to struggling poor people to a racist system of oppression. And I actually want Rick Santorum to know, because I know he's a listener, Obamacare is to apartheid what the Republican alternative to apartheid is to existence. In other words, yeah, nothing.
And so there's no rhetorical depth to which they will not sink. So whatever you can come up with saying, oh, I wonder if they'll actually do this, don't worry, they will.
Yeah, it's really, really shocking. And I don't really understand how, you know, conservatives can't just say, hey, you know what, we grew from this experience and learned from him. I mean, I just don't get it. And again, it's people always say,
what kind of people do you think you're dealing with? Grow, learn, improve,
And that's why, you know, I'm sorry, but we have to remind people of what the GOP stood for in the 80s, what Ronald Reagan and Dick Cheney and Grover Norquist all fought for to keep that, you know, Jerry Falwell told people that you would help the blacks of South Africa much more by rejecting Mandela and the ANC and supporting Mandela because then the money would trickle, and supporting South Africa because the money would trickle down to them. I mean, these guys or their acolytes are still among us. So, I think it does no disservice to Reagan to talk about what he really stood for, because, it wasn't all that great.
Right.
Rude, what's next for you, and where can the folks follow you?
They can follow me at rudepundit.blogspot.com and also on the Twitter at rudepundit.
And Rude Pundit
that
came on stage.
That makes it so easy.
You came on stage at the big Stephanie Miller show in Philly last year.
I did. Next time you're in this territory, I hope that I'll be able to do it again.
Well, it's going to be a very exciting tour for 2014 with a lot of new faces, and we'll tell you that as soon as we can. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. We'll be right back after the break.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Stephanie despite overwhelming popular demand.
Thank you for listening.
Chris Lavoie is in the L.A. studio. Jim Ward is in the L.A. studio. Oh, yeah. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hiya.
Bonjour.
Great to have you here. There's so much going on. Oh, my God. People are going nuts right now between Obamacare, between this hypocrisy over the response to President Mandela's death, between the fact that the sexy liberal comedy tour featuring Hal Sparks, Stephanie Miller, myself, and special guest Dan Savage comes to Seattle's Paramount Theater this Saturday. And with all this excitement, it's easy to lose sight of the things that really count during the holiday season. And to me, the thing that really counts during the holiday season is when you can manage to get Eric Bollard of Media Matters on your radio show.
Eric Bollard from Media Matters for America, doing the Lord's work as usual.
Eric Bollard.
Come on, baby.
Eric Bollard.
Let's dive into the right-wing world.
I don't know what that means.
Eric Bollard from Media Matters, whom we love.
Bollard.
This is Eric Bollard. Hello, sir. Great to talk to you again.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Terrific. I was great having you on my current show all year, and it's great to have you on the radio today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So I'm thrilled to have you here because we were talking briefly in the previous hour about this the very, very divergent responses of our right-wing friends to the death of President Mandela. On the one hand, you've got the people who forget everything that really happened during the 80s, and on the other hand, you've got the people who remember a lot of stuff that never actually happened during the 80s. Between the folks who think the Ronald Reagan and the Republicans were always standing up for freedom, or the folks who think that Nelson Mandela killed a lot of white people and was a communist. Everyone's wrong, it seems, on this one way or the other. What's your take been so far, Mr. Bollard?
Well, it was very interesting because you're right, it was all over the place. So there was some just old-fashioned revisionism and whitewashing and pretending that the Republican Party, the conservative movement, one of its defining elements in the 1980s was opposition to Nelson Mandela, specifically opposition to sanctions in South Africa. That was like a pillar of the Republican Party. Dick Cheney, when he was running for vice president in 2000, was asked about his vote, you know, back in 86, and he said, "No." He said, "Oh, I have no regrets about voting to keep Nelson Mandela in prison."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "I was totally fine with that vote. I wouldn't have changed it now." So,
but he said because of communism. Right?
Yeah, because of communism and because of terrorists or things like that. But
right, so hate of communism is more important than love of freedom.
On another hand, there was also some commendable commentary. I saw a National Review Online basically admitting previous conservative mistakes. They were wrong about Nelson Mandela. Breitbart, there was a very nice obituary written. The irony was, so you get at Breitbart, you read this rather mostly nice, you know, slightly revisionist Obit, and you read this National Review Online, gee, conservatives were wrong about, and then you get to the comments, and it's like a Klan rally. Mm-hmm. And you have the Breitbart readers, and you have the National Review readers, they're base, they're people who are there every day, saying the most crazy, deranged, hateful, racist things you could even think of. And then, the disconnect really strikes, and you're like, you know, it's amazing that these sites have cultivated this atmosphere, and that even when they try to make amends, and even when they try to come down on the right side of social history or racial history, you know, their hardcore readers are not having it and are just typing up the most crazy racist things mm-hmm. you can imagine.
But is it really the most crazy racist things, or is it the most calculatedly shaded racist things, Eric? Because it seems to me that screaming anti-communism is the great cloaking device for racists.
You can lie all you want about Mandela,
but just say you're lying in the name of opposing communism and you can do it.
Oh, well, again, you know, if we're talking about the readers and their comments, and again, you know, I don't like to judge sites by their comments. Everyone knows how hard mm-hmm. they are to police and things like that.
These
Breitbart readers, these blog readers, they weren't bothering with the communist argument. They were just going straight to, you know, beyond the, again, it was like a Klan rally online. I mean, it was just mind-boggling.
The Ted Cruz comments on Facebook were like a Klan rally that had been infected with hallucinogens, because I never knew Mandela killed thousands of white people with his own bloody hands until this.
That was another perfect example. Ted Cruz, you know, comes out, says the right thing, you know, tries to be sort of a statesman, and on his Facebook page, and the readers were just like not having it, because the conservative movement, particularly under Obama, has just fermented this hatred, this anger, and most importantly, they've given the green signal that all of this stuff is okay. You know, you barely need race coding anymore. Mm-hmm. Just get it all out there and don't hold back, and, you know, express your hatred along race lines and things like that.
I do not like black eggs and ham.
Well, it does seem at this point that, you know, there this sort of like insanity, this conservative racist dystopia that we're getting here, where at this point, for some, not all, for some of our right-wing friends, being called racist has become a badge of honor for some people. They want to be called racist so they can claim they've been unfairly called racist. I'm not saying that some people on the left haven't thrown around the R word a bit too liberally. Of course. But my right-wing friends, and I know you're listening, if you've been unfairly called a racist for opposing this president, congratulations. You know how it felt to be unfairly called un-American for opposing Bush.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. You know, look, you know, a year ago we were dealing with this cauldron with the Trayvon Martin killing and then the trial, and all this stuff, really this Obama-era stuff came to the mm-hmm. surface, and now we saw a mini version of this over the weekend with the death of Nelson Mandela. And
yes.
when you even just sort of tap into that, you're going to get some ugliness. But the larger picture, and leaving that aside, yes, there was a lot of revisionism going around. There was a lot of whitewashing. On Digby's site, Hullabaloo, which I tweeted this quote over the weekend, I'm paraphrasing, you know, in 1986, you know, Ronald Reagan was calling, calling Nelson Mandela a communist while selling arms to the extremists in Iran. So people sort of forget, people want to forget what was really going on in the 80s when Reagan was in the White House. So there was completely on the wrong side of history on lots of things.
We did kick Grenada's ass. We got to give him
that. Yeah, we sure did.
Yes, after we cut and run, we got to strut and run. I do want to give President Bush some credit, because it was under President Bush's administration that the African National Congress was removed from the terrorism watch list in 2008, 14 years after Mandela became president.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Bush.
It was amazing it took that long. And again, but, you know, I think one of the reasons to highlight the Mandela, A, is to sort of push back on they're trying to rewriting of history, but also pointing out, you know, the conservative movement, the Republican Party, has a pretty strong track record of being on the wrong side of history on lots of important things. And as they spend year four trying to bury healthcare reform, mm-hmm. you know, I'm pretty confident people will look back at that and say, oh, yeah, they're on the wrong side of history again. So there's a pattern. And we're seeing it again with the Mandela stuff.
Well, and this is actually, you know, very, very interesting. And I think you raise a great point, Eric, when we're talking about our right-wing friends. These are the people who were wrong about Reaganomics balancing a budget. They were wrong about selling arms to Iran and Iran-Contra. They were wrong about Oliver North. They were wrong about Bill Clinton being not able to balance a budget. They were wrong about impeaching Clinton. They were wrong about going after, they were wrong about thinking 9/11 was about freedom. They were wrong right. about Iraqis greeting us as liberators. They've been wrong about everything, wrong about the president's birth certificate, wrong about Sarah Palin, and now the people who've been wrong about everything for 30 years really want you to believe what they say
yeah.
about the Affordable Care Act. Do you know that
right.
pattern?
Yeah, and again, you know, the odds that they're going to be right about this, I think, are pretty slim.
I mean, what's it going to take for our Republican brothers and sisters, and I'm not a Democrat, I'm not saying the Democrats are the saviors at all, but what's it going to take for our conservative brothers and sisters, Eric, to wake up from the matrix and realize that the Republican Party has spent 30-odd years telling social conservatives what they want to hear and then redistributing wealth to the upper 1%, and that's the only thing they're good at?
Well, yeah, particularly with the Tea Party movement. I mean, you see this huge gap in terms of, you know, remember the Tea Party movement for like 3 weeks way back in 2009 actually was sort of a populist groundswell, and it got completely co-opted by the Koch brothers and Fox News and things like that. So the original intent of the Tea Party movement, sort of this anti-tax, anti, you know, almost anti big business, but not in the usual way. It's been completely eliminated, and you're right. You have a Republican Party, you know, that failed. It failed their social conservatives on gay marriage. It's failed them on so many of the important issues that they claim they're going to fight and win for. And now, you know, whether it's immigration reform or job discrimination legislation, now, you know, they're just completely the party of obstruction and resistance. And that's certainly true of healthcare reform, where they have famously come up with no alternative whatsoever. So it's one thing
Because they can't have an alternative, Eric, because Obamacare is the GOP alternative.
Yeah,
the liberal plan is single payer. The liberal plan is single payer. The Democratic yeah. plan is a public option. The conservative plan was Romney Care, and that's what a Republican think tank invented. A Republican governor made it law. A Republican Supreme Court upheld it furious because a Democratic president made it the law of the land, and next year it's going to start saving Republican lives. And what's that going to do to the GOP?
Yeah, and it's interesting that you know, you don't really hear repeal anymore, even on Fox News, even on Rush Limbaugh. You know, I think that died with the shutdown debacle, and that's what that was. The whole debacle was tied around was this phony notion of repealing, and they voted for it 40 times. But even now, the right-wing media has sort of dropped that, which is the concession is this isn't going anywhere. This is going to be the law of the land for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And now the sad part is, you know, just hoping it fails, going back to the famous Rush Limbaugh line from 2009, and just hoping health care reform fails, hoping more people don't have affordable quality health care. And that's
what patriots do.
If that's your platform, that's your platform. I mean, you know, good luck with it.
Yeah, we're talking to the great Eric Boldert of Media Matters, and I think you're exactly right. We saw the Supreme Court reject yet another argument against the Affordable Care Act last week. They won't even hear it. I think thanks in large part due to Republican hissy fits, you've seen the White House really, really put the screws to fixing this website. We can never thank Republicans enough because they do keep Democrats in line. That's why Democrats bring deficits down, because Republicans shriek about it when Democrats are in office. So we give them credit for it. But, Eric, do you really think that this is the beginning of the end of the demonizing of the Affordable Care Act? I mean,
if they give that up,
what are they going to run on in 2014?
Right, not the demonizing, but the repeal. Right, and you know, I think they still think, you know, these debunked horror stories, not that there aren't trials and tribulations, but literally every time Fox has someone on to recount their Obamacare horror story, you know, within 24 hours, it's just completely debunked. So, you know, I think the Republican Party is hoping that, you know, this anecdotal tidal wave will take them to the election in 11 months, which is doesn't make any sense. I mean, already it's sort of starting to peter out. And already, you know, the horror story narrative is sort of on the wane. So there's no way that's going to power them. Look, you know, they thought healthcare reform was going to, you know, cost Obama re-election. You know, they thought this was going to permanently torpedo the Democratic Party, and it obviously hasn't. So, you know, they will continue to demonize. They will continue to undercut. They will continue to try to make sure it doesn't work. But, you know, that's not that's hard to have a long-term strategy. I can't think of any domestic policy where that worked for the party and minority over the long term.
Eric Bollard, how can the folks out there follow you?
MediaMatters.org is the best place.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. We'll be taking your calls when we come back. The great Eric Bollard, and we'll be listening for you at 1-800-STEPH-12 right after this.
Join the party. 1-800-STEPH-12.
Stephanie Miller.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fiegelsang. I want to give a shout-out to my wife's Uncle Glenn in San Antonio, Texas. He is in his 60s. He suffers from severe Asperger's, and we were terrified he couldn't get any insurance, and my aunt just wrote me to say that thanks to the Affordable Care Act, he is now covered.
That
another
is awesome.
Texas success story for a white person.
Oops.
So, thanks, Obamacare.
Yeah.
Man, so we're taking your calls all morning here at the Stephanie Miller Show at 800-STEPH-12.
Yeah.
And go ahead, Chris.
You know, Ann in Houston wanted to touch on the Affordable Care Act in Texas. Hey, Ann.
Hi.
Yeah, hi. Oh, this is I'm a first-time caller, but a long-time fan.
Oh, we'll be gentle.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Obamacare. I've been really worried since our dear Governor Perry turned down the Medicaid extension a lot of my friends, right?
What a patriot.
What a douchebag.
That's very offensive to the folks at Summer's Eve, ma'am.
Oh, too bad. Good point. Yeah, I just got it. Okay. So my friend, I have a bunch of friends who can't get insurance. And when you go to Bentaub, which is the only hospital in Houston which will take people who don't have insurance, it is like a sea of people. The average wait time is 13 hours to see a doctor. I mean, it is horrible, but most people in Houston have never seen it. But anyway, that's enough of that. So my friend Carol, who is a student, and has not been able to afford, well, she was able to afford the care at school, but it was pretty expensive for her, and it went into her student loans, of course. So she went on to the website, the government website, and she actually got a plan. It was $200 a month. Or so, 210, something like that. So the actual amount is not huge, but it was huge for her.
So what you're saying is Obamacare ruined her life, is what you're saying. She is destitute now, and that this horrible website did not work for her, and you're telling us that now she's worse off.
Wait a minute, no.
He's joking with you. He's joking with you, Ann.
Oh. We're kidding. We're kidding, Ann. Thank you for that success story, and we'll be right back after the break. You're awesome.
Stephanie Miller.
Screw Santa. Let's have some fun.
I'm in the Bovenger. And I'm
Oh, Susie Sue.
I'm taking my diction lessons from Iggy. Good morning. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I am John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all morning long with all y'all until 12 noon Eastern Time or 9 a.m. Pacific Time, if you like having non-disgusting weather and live there. And we're taking your calls all morning at 800-STEPH-1-2. Now, it's already been a rollicking show so far. We've had some great guests and some great calls. I do need to take a moment to talk about the exciting campaign to get the TV version of this show on Free Speech TV, because I recorded a promo for Steph a couple weeks ago in New York that just went up. And, you know, Chris, you can help me out on this, but
yeah,
what we're really working on is raising the money to get Stephanie's show broadcast on Free Speech TV,
right,
which is, for me, you know, of all the great news channels or talk shows, it's really the only place on TV I know of where you can have the ability to say anything, where nobody owns it,
right,
and you're able to, you know, speak as freely as possible, and it's in many ways the most independent station,
yep,
if not the only independent station left on
yep
TV.
It's not owned by any corporation whatsoever. It is supported by listeners and viewers like you. And they go completely on listener and viewer donations. So if you want to help donate to Free Speech TV to help get the Stephanie Miller Show back on television, go to stephaniemiller.com. There's a link there where you can go to our Indiegogo campaign and donate some money, and you can donate as much as you want, and you'll get various pieces of Stephanie Miller swag.
No way.
Yeah, for different levels of donation. So go over there and check it out and help us out. We'd appreciate it.
It's like Free Speech is one of those channels that, like, you know, can be a default setting. If you want something smart, if you want to know the facts, I mean, I go there for Tom Hartman. I go there for Amy Goodman and Bill Press now, too. So I'm so excited Stephanie's joining that family. And I'm happy to do anything I can do to help make that happen.
Yep.
So.
And we're going to be doing the Free Speech TV show from her house.
No way.
It's going to be so cool.
That's going to be
crazy. Yeah, we were doing the survey of her office space there yesterday, and it's going to make a really cool studio.
And if things slow down a bit, bring in the dogs.
Exactly.
Yes, well, she has several wings of that house where you could do it from. So, you know, you could have a different set every day if you wanted in
yep
the mansion.
Yeah.
But and as well having the two giant mastodons, come on, those two dogs who suffer from gigantism.
Yep, you will see them on TV.
Well, brilliant,
yep,
brilliant. So I want to talk about the abortion debate for a second, because I'm being trolled by these right-wing people at the
uh-oh
moment on Twitter.
Uh-oh.
And here's the deal, okay? You know, I don't know, this is going to keep on starting up, and this is what I just want to say to everyone out there who is opposed to abortion rights and votes Republican. You people are suckers. All y'all who think abortion needs to be banned and should be banned everywhere, good for you. We'll get to that in a second. But you guys keep thinking the Republican Party is going to be your white knight on a horse that's going to end abortion. Let me tell you people something about the truth. Abortion is the number one fundraising tool the Republican Party has. If they ever succeeded in ending all abortions, you know what they'd have to do? Rely exclusively on demonizing gay marriage and Mexicans. The GOP is not on a national level ever going to let abortion become illegal. Just like the NRA, they're going to keep on lying to you and telling you whatever scares you, so you'll keep on writing them checks.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been called pro-abortion a number of times this morning in social media while I've been doing the show. I check down periodically in the breaks, and I see how I'm being called pro-abortion. Nobody is pro-abortion. Nobody has ever said, oh, man, Game of Thrones is a rerun. Let's have an abortion, okay?
I had two this morning.
Right on. We're not pro-abortion. We're anti-letting men make that choice.
Yep.
For a woman, okay? We're pro women getting to make that choice for themselves. Now, if you think abortion is wrong, I got nothing but respect for you. You should never have one. And if you want to try and labor your entire life to stop other people from getting them, I respect your right to do that, and you have the legal system, but the GOP has been lying to you all along. Abortion has always been around, my friends. Abortion will always be around. And here's the big lie that nobody in the pro-life movement has had to look at yet, okay? If you overturn Roe versus Wade, abortion's not going to stop.
Right.
It's going to keep on continuing. It just won't be safe and legal anymore. Rich women will still go to their doctors to have it done, and poor women will still go to Dr. Kermit Gosnell's. And at the end of the day, that's what you're fighting for, anti-abortion folk. You're not fighting for an end to abortion. You're fighting for an end to the safe and legal kind.
Mm-hmm.
The pro-life movement that screams about Dr. Kermit Gosnell is the force in our country that's fighting to create thousands of new Dr. Kermit Gosnells, because we don't have an abortion problem in this country. We have an unwanted pregnancy problem with an abortion symptom. So if you want to end unwanted pregnancies, you want to bring all the liberals and conservatives together to find out ways we can reduce the number of unwanted pregnancies so that every child born in this society is born to a family that wants it, I'll be on your side all the way. That's how you reduce crime. That's how you reduce homelessness and hunger. That can help an economy. But what we're doing right now is a racket, pro-life people, and y'all are the suckers for it. I'd love to know your thoughts at 800-STEP-1-2, but I got a little bit sick of being called pro-abortion all morning on the radio, the internet.
If you're against contraception, then you must be pro-abortion because you're ensuring that there'll be a lot more of them.
Exactly. And let me go one step further for my Judeo-Christian friends. The Bible at no point comes out against contraception. Ever. Jesus never mentions contraception or abortion or gay people for that matter. He is against the death penalty. Okay? Jesus comes out many times from when he wouldn't let them slut shame stone the adulteress. They had her dead to rights. You're allowed in that society to stone a woman to death if she's committed adultery. God said so. Jesus stood up against God's law and said it's wrong. He among you without sin cast the first stone. When Jesus said forgive someone who wrongs you 70 times 7. When Jesus said forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Time and again, the guy comes out against killing the sinner. So if you support the death penalty but are against abortion, you're not pro-life. You're pro-some life. You're a fake. And you need to know it, because I'm tired of you guys. You want to respect fetuses, it's great, but I'm tired of the meanness, and I'm tired of these guys pushing women around. No woman has ever been enthusiastic about an abortion in her life. And the meanness about this, from a bunch of rubes who think that because they oppose abortion rights, they automatically are getting into heaven first ahead of all y'all, it's offensive, it's an insult to whatever God you believe in, and it makes America look stupid to the rest of the world. And maybe some of you all have some experience with that yourselves, but let me tell you, the trolls are out. And at this point, the GOP has proven they don't care about minorities. They don't care about the working class. They don't care about the poor. All they have left is the illusion they care about fetuses. And that is the red, white, and blue thread they are clinging to for the 2014 elections.
Yep, absolutely. You know what? We have some people who want to call on this.
Let's get them on.
All right, let's go to Lenny in Albuquerque. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Lenny.
Hi. You were talking about abortion. The Bible has nothing about abortion. On contrary,
actually, it does.
Well, there's in Leviticus, it says if a man causes a woman to abort by knocking her down, he has to pay a fine.
If the fetus dies and she has a miscarriage, the man pays a fine.
He pays a fine. You can't pay a fine for a life. It's a life for a life.
Right.
The other issue I have is...
It's worth pointing out at the same passage, if I could, sir, that if the man strikes a woman and it kills her, the man is to be executed because he's taken a life. If he strikes her and it kills the unborn child, he pays a fine. That's God law, not mine. Yeah. Go on, sir.
Exactly. And I don't want other people imposing their religion on me. Should I stand on the corner and throw stones at people for driving on the Sabbath?
Exactly right. Again, the Sabbath is his commandment, abortion is not. And exactly. I'll go you one step further, sir. If you look at the book of Numbers, there's a really creepy passage where God gives Moses instructions on how to terminate a pregnancy if a wife has been unfaithful. By taking her to the temple priest, he makes this concoction that causes her bowels to swell, and she will become barren for the rest of her life. So the Old Testament comes down in favor of abortion and maiming women in some cases. So, they can get off their biblical high horse on that. Some of us have read the book.
Yep, absolutely. All right, Eric in Minneapolis on abortion. Hey, Eric.
Hey, how you doing?
Good morning.
Morning. Yeah, see, I was just going to agree with you. You know, I know a couple of people, and that's their sole reasoning for voting right is abortion rights. And it's ludicrous because... It's what they want. They want division. They, united we stand, and divided we fall. And they keep they got the blacks against the whites and the anti-abortionists against the abortionists and against
the people in favor of women's reproductive rights. Let's not use their language, okay?
Yes, and you know what's happening is it all boils down to one thing: is our educational system, and when we don't educate the people, we just end up with high unwanted pregnancy rates and when they privatize our education system, which they're going to do, then we're really having problems. You know, we're really going to have problems here, and people better start waking up, start
smelling the coffee, because pretty soon we won't have the liberties of voting and that. They'll be gone. They will be gone, and it's not far away.
Well, I have to disagree with you. I hope you're wrong, and I think you are wrong, because I do think there's a lot of Americans, the majority of Americans, who won't stand for that sort of thing. And it's worth pointing out that last year, Gallup did a poll where only 43% of Americans described themselves as pro-choice. And the anti-abortion folks trumpeted this as proof that support for Roe v. Wade was on the wane, but it wasn't, because the actual poll showed that 77% of Americans support abortion rights in all or some cases. Only 43% call themselves pro-choice, like my parents. My parents would never call themselves pro-choice, and they don't like abortion at all, but they remembered what life was like. My mom was a nurse. They remembered what life was like when it was unsafe and illegal, and they didn't want to go back to those days. Again, there's lots of folks out there that don't like abortion, but they don't like abortion being illegal even more. And that's why I think that you won't see this change, that it won't ever happen, and the GOP knows it. But they're going to keep saying it because that's how they raise their funds. And I thank you for the call.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who else we got?
Well, you know what? Let's take a break, and then we'll take some more calls after the break.
Oh, okay.
I know.
Thank you very
I'm
much.
Sorry.
That's okay. But we do want to know your thoughts on this because, again, it might be the only thing the GOP has to run on in 2014. So it ain't going nowhere. The number is 1-800-STEPH-12. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph.
This was so funny in my head when I planned it.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Josh Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all morning, dealing with the right-wing trolls and taking your calls at 800-STEPH.
And dealing with the disco.
Dealing with disco, right.
Dealing with the disco. My God, it's like Studio 54 all over again. Yeah, some of us remember all too well those coke-soaked days of Stephanie Miller in Studio 54 with Warhol and Liza. Oh, like it was yesterday. Those were the days. And now she, of course, Stephanie is out. Her throat is still bothering her. She has bronchitis, and
yep.
We have a huge, huge show this weekend in Seattle with Hal Sparks and special guest Dan Savage joining us at the Paramount. We'll play the promo for that in a little bit, but we are encouraging her to rest her voice and rest her mind so the brilliance can be at 11 come this weekend. So we're taking your calls, and it turns out that, believe it or not, listeners to this particular show have a few opinions on the abortion debate.
Yeah.
I'm as shocked as you are. Sue is calling from Rockville. Good morning, Sue.
Hey, good morning. The estrogen co-host is back. I'm glad you're there, John. Hi, Chris. Hi, Jim.
I'm the estrogen co-host? Why am I the estrogen co-host?
No, Sue helped us out on Thursday and Friday.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. I was going to say, I haven't even waxed.
Me neither.
No note.
Oh. There's three things I just want to say about abortion issues. You know, the last time I checked, there are no spontaneous pregnancies. It's been a long time, and even if you believe that. And so until every sperm is sacred, may I gently ask men to STFU? Okay.
Men are decided what women can do with the insides of their bodies when men stop trying to gain access to the inside of their bodies.
Men, you know, it's the oldest joke in the world. You know, if a man got pregnant, you know, abortion would be a sacrament.
Oh, madam, if men got pregnant, locker room schmucks would be arguing over who had the most.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, I've had 7 third trimesters right over here. Check me out. Okay, guys would brag about it.
It's that men want to punish women for having this amazing power to have be pregnant and to punish women for sex because it tempts them and it makes them feel bad. And so, you know, I'm a big Monty Python fan, so I always sing every sperm is sacred. And until that happens, let's move on, you know, stay out of my business.
But do you have two children?
Yeah.
Thank you, Sue.
The other thing, John?
Yes.
I have it. I am also the official parenting specialist of the Stephanie Miller Show. You have a toddler running around your house.
Yes, that's what they tell me.
their job is to commit suicide every day, and mm-hmm. it is your job to prevent them from doing it.
Oh, that's what my job is. Okay.
You watch what they do, and my younger son-in-law called me one day as he was holding his toddler daughter with one heel as she was flying off the bed, and he said, I've just become to understand what you've been telling me and warning me about.
Yes, they are chaos theory in human form, and but you know what? The thing is, God makes them cute so we don't eat them, and it works out. So I thank you, Sue. Okay. It's they're horrible beast babies. They're awful Americans. They contribute nothing. Don is calling from Minneapolis. Good morning, Don. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hi, good
Don.
Morning.
Hi.
Yep. Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. I just wanted to call and thank you for your comments on the abortion issue. I've never, in all the years I've listened to left radio, I've never heard anybody describe it as well, the fact that nobody is pro-abortion and the fact that if you made abortion illegal, it would not stop abortion.
It would not. It would just, you're right. It would just make it illegal, unsafe, and unregulated.
Exactly right. Unsafe in particular. I just want to thank you for stating it so well. The only way to stop abortions is to stop unwanted pregnancy.
That's the only way.
I wish more people would get that word out. I just think that's fantastic. I wanted to call and thank you.
I don't know thank you for the call. I don't know a single progressive or liberal or whatever you want to call them who wouldn't love to see the abortion rate go down. In fact, it is worth pointing out the inconvenient statistic that abortions went down every year Bill Clinton was in office. Mm-hmm. And Chris, finish the sentence. They went up every year George W. Bush was in office.
Yes.
And funny how that works.
Uh-huh.
And again, that's what the right wing wants because that's the only thing they have left to help them hustle your money, conservatives. You are suckers if you're against abortion rights and contribute to the national GOP. Susan is calling us from Chapel Hill about this same topic. Good morning, Susan. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hey there. I also want to just thank you for what you said. It was just beautifully put. And you said something quite quickly that I wanted to kind of reiterate, and that
is, I do that. Sorry.
Bush has been around forever.
Mm-hmm. It has been around forever. It is in the Bible, Book of Numbers. God tells Moses how to have it done. It existed in Jesus' time. The Romans did it. Jesus knew it existed, and yet it didn't find its way into the Ten Commandments or into anything Jesus ever talked about.
Yeah, that's just a lot of my friends that are against abortion seem to think it started in the 60s.
You're right. And again, I think that liberals don't, you know, we don't do well if we demonize all folks against abortion rights. We got to be honest and say that a lot of folks are against abortion rights because they really do think it's murder. They really care. And I respect that. And you know what? Who am I to say what's murder and what isn't? Yeah. But the fact is, they're the ones who have to have their own thinking shifted because all they're doing is being exploited by the GOP. They're not actually solving the problem. We don't have an abortion problem. We have an unwanted pregnancy problem. The abortion is the symptom. And I thank you for your wisdom.
And also, people should be aware that early abortion is very different from late-term abortion. You're talking about extremely different things.
Extremely different. And people should also be aware when they go talking about, you know, like the morning after pill being called an abortion pill. It's not. All that pill does is prevent a fertilized egg from attaching to the wall of the uterus, mm-hmm. where it implants and becomes a baby, and it flushes out of the body naturally. That's all that pill does. Now, if you think that's abortion, then you believe that God is the most prolific abortionist in history,
yes.
because more than 50% of fertilized eggs are flushed out of a woman's body in exactly mm-hmm. the same way. It is an alternative to abortion. It is not abortion. Liberals, right. like conservatives, would love to see the abortion rate go down. Let's focus on the stuff we agree on.
Exactly.
Isn't that easy? George is calling from Chicago. Good morning, George. You're on the Steph Show.
Hey, George.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm in essential agreement with everything that John's been saying, but I have one point of disagreement. I object strenuously to characterizing anti-choice, anti-abortion people as pro-life. By and large, this group of people is pro-war, they're pro-execution. prosecution. They're pro-unrestricted gun ownership. Yep. They were in favor of the sequester, which caused a lot of pain and suffering in our fellow citizens. They want government to be shrunk down where it can be drowned in a bathtub, which will leave a lot of our people high and dry. I mean, I call them the peepees, the punishment people, because I think that several layers below their subconscious, what they're really all about is that they're sadists who are in favor of the infliction of punishment and pain.
Right. Only in America can you be pro-war, pro-torture, pro-death penalty, pro-drone attacks, and still call yourself pro-life. It's the Steph Miller Show, coming back after this.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for the great lady who's out sick with bronchitis all morning long, taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. We have covered a lot of ground already on today's show with some spectacular guests. We're also keeping an office pool going to see how many days it will be until Glenn Beck claims Nelson Mandela was a conservative right-wing icon. And right now, I'm very pleased to welcome the next guest of the show. Joining us in the Burbank Bureau is Congressman Adam Schiff, representative for California's 28th Congressional District, a friend of the show, a hero of progressive causes, and someone I was delighted to have many times on my show Viewpoint on Current TV. Congressman Schiff, welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
It's great to have you, and I'm really thrilled to have you this morning because we, of course, saw the new job numbers out, and 203,000 jobs were added last month, which to me is a sure sign that Obamacare really is destroying the economy. and I want to get your comment on that, sir, because clearly, I mean, how much more signal do you need that this is wrecking America's workforce?
Well, it's encouraging news to see the job numbers go up, to see the GDP rate, to see the jobless claims fall. I have to say, in terms of what the Congress is doing specifically on the economy, our failure to pass a jobs bill, our austerity budget policies, it's very frustrating because those numbers could be twice as good. I'm convinced we'd be completely out of the lingering impacts of the recession if in terms of our economic policy and our budgetary policy, Congress would get out of the way. But you're absolutely right. It certainly shows that the Affordable Care Act, far from being a great impediment to the economy, has constrained health care costs for the first time in decades and providing coverage to millions of people that have never had it before.
You know, Congressman, we are now commemorating the two-year anniversary of the House GOP killing the president's jobs bill. And I think it's really an important point that everyone listening needs to know when having this debate with your right-wing loved one or coworker is that the president put forth a jobs plan that was 60% tax cuts, and the GOP killed it anyway. I mean, are you still as shocked by that, sir, as I am?
It is shocking because, as you point out, not only in terms of tax cuts, but in terms of a lot of other what used to be nonpartisan or bipartisan priorities, you know, investment in the infrastructure of the country, for example. When you think about the Eisenhower administration, you think about investment in infrastructure. But that now is, you know, yesterday's Republican Party. Today's Republican Party is all about austerity budgets, about going after federal workers, local workers, any workers. And unfortunately, we paid a real price for it. This is probably the most frustrating thing about being in Congress right now, and there's a kind of a catalog a list here, but is the fact that there are still lots of people in America who are hurting because the economy is not back to full strength, who don't need to be hurting. If we would stop these sequential government imposed crises over the fiscal cliff, over whether we default on our debt ceiling, these sequester level austere cuts, you would think we would learn something from watching Europe and seeing what the austerity budgets there have done for them. But no, this is not your father's moderate GOP. It's quite an extreme GOP.
Or we could watch the Scandinavian nations, sir, and what they've done and see that in many ways the Danish dream is the new American dream. I mean, they've invested in their people, and they're seeing positive dividends. And I'm glad, sir, that you mentioned President Eisenhower, because Eisenhower, as you know, was the last Republican president to have a surplus. Nixon was the last to balance a budget. And when you think of the Eisenhower administration, you think of a GOP that supported labor, that supported high taxation on the wealthiest among us to help all Americans and the economy thrive under that system, that had vast public works plans like the Interstate Highway Plan, and of course, under Eisenhower, that evil socialism of the GI Bill helped our economy in ways that benefit us to this day. And when we look at today's atmosphere, we see rather the exact opposite. We see a Democratic president trying again and again to pitch the Republicans their own ideas in the spirit of compromise. A jobs bill that's 60% tax cuts, or a health care plan that is not single-payer or public option, but actually the Heritage Foundation's GOP plan. I can't think of a greater form of compromise, and yet they reject it time and time again. Congressman, you know these guys. You work with them. Do you ever want to just shake them and say, hey, working with the president to improve the economy will improve your votes back home and your campaign donations, too? I mean, isn't it hurting the GOP in the long run?
Well, it is. It's certainly hurting their brand, which I think has probably about the lowest numbers in its history. Not that the Democratic brand is doing all that well, or any brand is doing all that well at the moment. But, you know, I think the reality is that the way these super PACs have evolved now, they don't care what they do to the brand. They don't care what the speaker asks them to do, who I think left to his own devices would be far more pragmatic than he's been. They only care what Heritage says, what Grover Norquist says, what these outside super PACs say, who can come in with $2 million and blow them out of the water in their next election cycle if they don't toe the party orthodoxy, which has become increasingly hard right. And unfortunately, on policy after policy now, just because this president proposes it, it is therefore by definition anathema to these groups. And you mentioned several of them, but the one that really stands out to me, you put your finger on, and that is the health insurance mandate. I mean, that was a Heritage Foundation idea. That was a John McCain embraced idea. But then when this president embraced it, became a bad idea. And the most destructive thing of all is, you know, we've always had these fights throughout history. We had these fights over Medicare and Social Security. But when the fight was over, the fight was pretty much over. It doesn't matter how hard you fight. It doesn't matter what the vote is. You never finish anything. You have to keep on relitigating it in the House. You know, as you know, we passed some 40-odd bills to repeal Obamacare. And they simply cannot let it go. They cannot let it be successful. And as a result, there are lots of people who could take advantage of the Affordable Care Act, who could get coverage under Medicaid, who could get coverage in a health insurance exchange, but are being deterred by red state governors who don't want it to be successful, by a media campaign that tries to frighten people away from enrolling. And it is it's just a real shame, and it's damaging the country.
You know, I'm a big fan of Ted Cruz, of course, as a comedian, and I consider Ted Cruz to be the Abraham Lincoln of Sarah Palin's. And he actually said this week that he was decrying the lawless implementation of Obamacare. Congressman, I'm pretty sure that when it's been passed by both houses of Congress, signed by a president, and upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, it seems pretty lawful. I don't really know where he's coming off with that. But again, it just seems like beating up on this bill, calling it Obamacare, they see that as a way to gain votes rather than work with it to help their own constituents, which I think is the definition of patriotism. I just, at this point, it seems like they're over the website false umbrage, and yet they're still going to try everything they can do up until the point this begins helping Republican lives.
That's exactly right. And you know, the fact of the matter is Senator Cruz is a very bright guy. And he knows exactly what he's doing. It's very good politics, I have to assume, from his point of view, or he wouldn't be doing it. But it is certainly not good for the country. You see this on issue after issue in domestic policy. You see it increasingly on foreign policy, where simply because the president is for it, then you can gin up your base back home by being the most outrageous opponent of it. You know, one of my staff had a conversation with one of my constituents over the Affordable Care Act, and the constituent was insisting that, well, if it was so good, why aren't members of Congress in the Affordable Care Act and their staff? And she said, well, we are, and I just enrolled on the exchange, as I'm required to do under the Affordable Care Act. No, you're not. You're not covered. And she said, well, I can show you my enrollment. And the fact is, well, and then he said, well, if that's not true, then how could they say it? And the reality is they do say it, and they say it over and over and over again. And the facts have very little to do with any of it. As the quote you made, you referenced from Senator Cruz, this lawless plan that was passed by both houses, signed by the president and upheld by the Supreme Court. If that's lawless, then I'm not sure what lawful is.
A lawless implementation. That's like, that would be like telling Ted Cruz a state school is an Ivy League. Oh, horrors, horrors. But you're exactly right, sir. And I don't know if you've ever heard this term, but there's a debating term called the Gish Gallop. It's widely considered to be what Governor Romney used against President Obama in their first debate last year. And it's sort of like a lawyer just filing nonstop motions in a trial that is meant to slow down the opposition. And the opposition must then deal with the obstruction rather than making their own case. And what we've seen sometimes in debating is you can throw out a ton of disinformation, and it doesn't matter that the next day, papers will say that you were wrong. Their fans don't read papers. What matters is seeing your Democratic opponent spend half of his mic time trying to disassemble the lies you've just put up. And we see it time and time again where they can put out these, you know, talking points that aren't true, like Senator Cruz saying it was a lawless implementation. And while we're wasting time trying to, you know, point out what the reality is, they move on to their next lie, and they're telling their funding base what they want to hear. And I have to get your response on something that I don't understand how conservatives aren't outraged, but it's the rejection of Medicaid expansion. We see this happening across the country with governors like Rick Perry, where the government is saying, here are billions of dollars to help the sick people of your state and take the burden off your taxpayers, and they're just saying no. And it's costing their states billions. I don't really understand, Congressman, perhaps you can explain it, the logic behind these Republican governors. Are you as shocked as we are to see them rejecting these funds?
It is shocking, and it's so dismaying because they're harming their most vulnerable citizens. There are some, I'm happy to say, there are some deviations from that policy. The governor in Nevada, for example, is... embrace the Medicaid expansion, and it's because Nevada has one of the highest rates of uninsurance among its population. But those GOP governors are few in number, and I think, frankly, they see that if they do embrace, these expansions of Medicaid and these other provisions within the Affordable Care Act, even though it helps their constituents, it hurts them in their party. And if they have national ambitions, it poses a real roadblock to them. So, I think for those governors, it's all about their national hopes. For most of those governors, those are quite fantastic hopes and quite illusory. But nonetheless, the people who are really paying the price are their constituents that could get health care. And could get health care that is funded initially entirely by the federal government and then ultimately to the degree of 90% by the federal government. It's a pretty sweet deal for the states. But you're right, it is inexplicable and hurtful that these governors aren't doing it.
And people will die because they don't want to be seen as accepting a gift from President Obama. More or less, Ronald Reagan was wrong. The scariest words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to not help.
Yeah.
We're joined by Congressman Adam Schiff of California's 20th Congressional District. We'll be coming back, taking some of your calls right after the break. This is The Stephanie Miller Show.
Don't you wish your girlfriend was a freak like her? It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fiegelsang, filling in for Steph all morning, taking your calls at 800-STEPH-12. Joined in studio, as always, by the great Jim Ward and the great Chris Lavoie. And now we're joined by Congressman Adam Schiff. And Congressman, it's a pleasure to have you here. I want to use the George Michael song as a bit of a segue. It's not often you can say George Michael and Nelson Mandela in the same sentence, but at the time that George Michael released his song Freedom, of course, Mr. Mandela was still serving time in prison on his 27-year prison sentence.
Yeah.
And we were talking extensively earlier this morning about some of our right-wing friends who vehemently opposed any sanctions on the apartheid regime of South Africa back in the 80s, including President Reagan and former Vice President Cheney. And I wondered if you had any thoughts or insights on that whole period. I know it was before your tenure in the House. But what did Nelson Mandela mean to you, sir? And how do you feel about this sudden conservative deification of the man?
Well, it may be very late in coming, but I'm happy that he's broadly considered a hero, even yes. among conservatives. What I find so extraordinary about his life is someone who is incarcerated for more than a quarter of a century can emerge from that experience and be as other centric and generous and without bitter recrimination, can embrace those who imprisoned him, embrace those who abused him. It is just an extraordinary story, and to imagine going through that kind of transformation and emerging as that kind of leader, it's just an extraordinary story, one of the most extraordinary stories of our generation. And, you know, it's one of the people that you're feel very fortunate to have lived at the same time with, and is a great model for leaders around the world, and particularly a model for post-conflict peaceful resolution and coexistence.
Absolutely. I was at NYU, sir, when he was released, and I saw a sign in my dorm for volunteers, and I wound up being a marshal on the welcoming committee for his visit to New York back in 1990, and I worked the Yankee Stadium rally, and the thing that impressed me the most was that, much like you said, when he went into prison, he was not an advocate of nonviolence, and he would have had every right to have become a very embittered radical during his years in that time, but instead he embraced the teachings of Gandhi, of Thoreau, of Dr. King, of Christ, and came out rather resolutely anti-violence, which we haven't heard too much about lately because we've, of course, heard a lot of Ted Cruz supporters claiming he killed thousands of white people. And at the same time, it does seem like there has been this real amnesia virus infecting a lot of our conservative brothers and sisters who forget that it was Republicans and together Democrats together who had to override President Reagan's veto of any sanctions on South Africa at the time. It almost seems inconceivable that just a generation ago, men who are profoundly respected today were standing up against freedom and for the apartheid regime.
It was interesting. I saw an interview with Secretary Baker where he stated that Reagan regretted not having supported sanctions on South Africa. I don't know whether that is accurate or an effort to rekindle Reagan's reputation, but... But I would like to believe that, but it's interesting how Mandela has become so well embraced, and I think it's wonderful, you know, notwithstanding some of those who still harbor their resentments towards him, but mm-hmm. I think it's just extraordinary. John, on a completely different note, I have to tell you a funny anecdote. I was in the Hollywood Christmas Parade last week, and I thought of the show because one of your listeners, when I was on with Stephanie a few months ago, said I sounded like a smooth jazz DJ. And we used to joke about that. And I'm riding in the Hollywood Christmas Parade, and there is someone holding up a sign that says, "Welcome, Adam Schiff, smooth jazz congressman."
Awesome.
I hope that fan is listening today, and I want to thank you for that sign. It wow. cracked me up.
Well, you certainly do have a broadcasting career in front of you, sir, if the Congress thing doesn't work out. Although I have to say, it's working out quite well for you. You've been in Congress since 2001 and have been an exemplary member of first the California Senate, where we can, I think, give you a lot of credit for doing so much work to get the Blue Line light rail extension going, now the Gold Line, I guess. And also, you know, your work you've done for the Anti-Piracy Caucus and the work you've done for the you know, freedom of the press, for national security, the awareness you've brought to Armenian genocide. And, you know, you've always been, to me, a rather fearless member of Congress who's not afraid to challenge his own party when morality dictates, which I think is a lesson to everybody. And so I do want to ask you about a couple of things that are dividing us today and just get you to weigh in, because I do consider you one of the most articulate spokespersons the party has. And I'm wondering how you're feeling about all the outcry we've seen about the potential deal that America has cut with Iran regarding their nuclear program.
Well, I think that the interim deal is a step forward, and it has been very controversial. There are those that think that nothing short of a complete deal ought to be accepted or advocated. And believe me, I would love it if we had an interim deal that said that Iran must roll back its entire program, must dismantle all of its centrifuges. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not realistic as an interim deal. And what we have, gotten through this is the next 6 months while negotiations proceed on a final deal. Their 20% enriched stockpiles have to be reduced down. Their 5% stockpiles can't be increased during that period. Their advanced centrifuges can't be brought online. The work at the Arak reactor, a heavy water reactor, has to stop. All of those things are positive, and all those things would be going on apace, just as they have been in the past. Without this agreement, we'd still be negotiating with Iran to try to bring about a complete rollback of their program. But I think it's a step forward, and I hope we don't see it scuttled by a sanctions bill in the Congress.
Congressman and smooth jazz master Adam Schiff, thank you for joining us.
You bet.
Stephanie Miller.
I can't believe there is a real Santa.
So that year I got a vibrator from Santa? That was really from Santa?
Stephanie Miller.
Ho, ho, ho!
You know, I'll be proud of my species when Nelson Mandela's death gets as much Twitter outrage as the dog from Family Guy's death.
Yeah, hello. Oh, God.
This is John Fugelsang, and I am filling in for Stephanie Miller all morning long. Many thanks to Congressman Adam Schiff for generously giving up his time and coming to join us in studio.
Yeah.
And we'll be taking your calls,
here
all
on the
y'all.
Smooth Jazz Channel.
He's a smooth jazz. Our sound is quiet and smooth. It's Southern California's only jazz station, listened to by no one. So we're taking your calls at 800-STEP-12. He's a very attractive man, I have to say.
Adam Schiff?
Adam Schiff,
yes.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes, I would love to see him run for more office in the future. He's
very
good at what he does.
And I'm very proud to have him as my congressman.
Oh, is he really?
Yes, yes he is.
Oh, dig you.
I know, right? Get a load of that.
Well, I was thrilled to have him here and thrilled to talk about these, you know, governors who are rejecting the Medicare funding from the government, because these tend to be the same ones who talk about patriotism the most.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing about the Affordable Care Act Republicans, because I know you're listening. If you guys wanted single-payer Republicans, it would be law by now. If you guys wanted a public option, it would be law by now. You guys, if you really were patriots and wanted to help save American lives, you guys could have passed a public option. You would have called it the American Life Freedom Protection Act, and it would have passed overwhelmingly, and the American people would hail you Republicans as heroes and patriots and economically responsible stewards of an economy, because you would have earned it, but you
haven't.
But No. And Jim, you know this. If you don't believe in saving American lives, you don't get to call yourself a patriot.
Right.
If you don't believe in healing the sick and helping to heal the sick, you don't get to call yourself Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're afraid of the competition from a public option hurting insurance companies, then you're not a capitalist. So,
and if you wave a Confederate flag in front of the White House, you're a...
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, that's hilarious. People who wave the Confederate flag and don't see a problem. Well, don't get me started on that. I'll take up the whole last half hour of the show.
Wave the swastika and the rising sun.
Well, no, it's actually a bit different, because the swastika, they don't fly in Germany anymore.
No.
They're embarrassed to fly it. They know that millions of people suffered and died under that government, and so they don't want to wave the symbol around because they don't want to hurt people's feelings, which means David Hasselhoff is their favorite singer, and they still have better taste than us. The Confederate flag is like your girlfriend, fellas. You know, it's like, let's say you're in a marriage, a union, and you decide to secede from your union, and you pick up with some skank, and you go off and party somewhere, and eventually you go broke, and you got to go crawling back to meet your wife for lunch to beg her to take you home at a restaurant in, I don't know, say Appomattox. when you move back into the big house, you're not going to hang the other skank's picture over the fireplace. And that's what the Confederate flag is. It's that hooah you were running around with when you left your home. You don't get to call yourself a patriot while flying the treasonous flag of an anti-American nation. America has never been at war with Russia or Iran or North Korea, but we have with South Carolina, and they're still making a fetish out of it. So I'll stop now before I drive everyone away. But I say this because I was making a film for PBS all fall, and I spent a lot of time in Alabama, Mississippi, Carolina, and, you know, they love America so much they're going to have this souvenir of the time they quit America because they wanted to keep people as pets. Joe is calling us from California. Joe, good morning. You, sir, are on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hi. Hey, first of all, smooth jazz is not real jazz. It's elevator music. If you want real jazz, you want to see John Coltrane or Thelonious Monk.
There you go.
Exactly.
The Loneliest Monk? What?
The Loneliest Monk, yes.
The Loneliest. Sarah Palin.
You know
the
what? Yes, you're actually right about that. Smooth jazz, we're like going waist deep into Kenny G. Right? When you say smooth jazz.
Oh, my God. My mother bought me a Kenny G album for Christmas 1 year. I almost died.
Wow.
Anyway, I've been waiting an hour and a half for somebody to point out to that troll that called the first hour that the deficit's been cut in half.
Well, yeah, but that's only a problem when a Democrat's in office, you see.
Right.
But Obama's done something that every other nation that's gone into austerity hasn't done. He's cut the deficit, and the employment's actually gone down a tick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, what do you make of that?
Well, I think... That means that somebody's doing something right up there in Washington. I don't like everything Obama's done, but,
I don't know anyone who does, but you're exactly right. It's like, Bush was a patsy. Obama's a leader. And whether you like, whatever you think of either one of them, that's just how it was, okay? They didn't need Bush on 9/11 because he wasn't actually running the country.
Right.
This guy is actually leading, and he could lead a lot more if he had a party that cared about improving America to earn their votes rather than opposing a black dude to earn their votes, because it's not working, Republicans. You have 3 years to get it together and act like men. So, you're exactly right. The deficit is only a problem when a Democrat's in office. And we all know when the last time a Republican balanced a budget was, right, Joe?
Yeah. Eisenhower.
Nixon. Eisenhower had
Nixon.
A surplus.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So what's the solution?
Bernie Sanders.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, please, no. I mean, you were saying about Bernie Sanders.
Oh, I was just saying Bernie Sanders should run as a Democrat.
Well, I agree with
that. If he runs as a third party, nothing's going to happen. But if he runs as a Democrat, he can push the other Democrats. Hillary Clinton would be the one I would be thinking of.
Bernie's 72 years old and or 71 years old, so he's up there. He's I don't know if he'll do it. I'd love to see him run for president. I'd love to see Mrs. Warren run for president. I think there's a good chance you'll see Howard Dean, believe it or not, run for president. But I do think you will see someone challenging Mrs. Clinton, not with the intention of beating her, but with the intention of pushing her more and more towards the ideals the Democratic Party is founded on. I'd like to see that happen, to see someone go and do the best they can to keep her as honest as possible in her campaign, because she's going to be having to raise a lot of money to defeat whoever the right wing puts up against her.
Yep.
So,
but she has a huge money making machine, though.
Well, she does.
Yeah.
She does. And that's why no one's really going to be able to beat her.
Exactly.
Except Chris Christie, who could beat her, and they'll never nominate him. I'll tell you who I think. I think there's a couple of Republicans who could get the nomination and could beat her. And when Mike Huckabee announced that he is ending his radio show, I think that's the clearest sign we've had yet that he's running for president. Mike Huckabee, I think, was the only Republican who could have beaten Barack Obama in 2008. His years as a televangelist made him very practiced at likably lying on camera to people and telling them what they want to hear, which made him a great politician. I don't think he's an honest man. I think he's very decent in many ways. But I do think that he embraces a lot of things that are the exact opposite of what Jesus talked about. And I think Huckabee could beat Mrs. Clinton if he gets the nomination. I also think Scott Walker might, believe it or not, be the wild card here. He has been cruel enough to working people to make the GOP give him a lot of money, and he could be a surprisingly effective dark horse candidate. But otherwise, I don't see who they have that could beat Mrs. Clinton. I think Huckabee at this point is the one to watch.
All right.
Okay. Tony is calling from Los Angeles about Nelson Mandela. Good morning, Tony. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hi, I was calling to clarify some points on the show that we talked about last Friday when I said with the whole Mandela thing, a lot of people get caught up in symbol rather than substance. Let's face it, the nice grandpa, nice guy image that he has now is acceptable. That's the symbol. The substance is black people in South Africa still are at the bottom of the heap. Just like I made the point here in the United States, we do have a black president, and I supported him. I worked on his first campaign in Chicago. But by the same token, black people still are at the bottom, of everything here. And then for those that called and wanted to say, attack me personally, first of all, they don't know me at all. They don't know what I've done with my life. I have two master's degrees, so I don't even want to go there. But the fact of the matter is a lot of people of color that are victims of white supremacy have Stockholm syndrome. Let's be for real. And the bottom line is it's not that I'm saying, you know, because I think Mandela was a great man. But let's face it, in the system of white supremacy worldwide, the grandpa image is much easier to be attracted to than the ANC.
Well, sure.
I know when we stand up for ourselves, we're killed. Always.
Well, Tony, I hear what you're saying, and I do appreciate it, and I thank you for the call. And I also think it's worth pointing out that in many cases, the media has shied away from anything that contradicts that kind grandfatherly image of Nelson Mandela. For example, they're not playing the scathing comments he made about President Bush on the eve of the Iraq invasion and occupation. They're not talking at all about his support for the Palestinian people. They're trying to make him look like what they've done to Dr. King, that he stood for one thing, being nicer to one racial minority and ignoring how much he stood up for working people. So I do think that we deify him and make him into a marble statue at our own peril, because there's a lot to learn from Nelson Mandela and his ongoing struggle. Do we have time for Kevin in D.C.?
Yeah, we do. Hey, Kevin in D.C., you're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Well, hello, crew.
Hello, hi. Kevin.
Hey, what's up, guys?
That's a smooth jazz voice right there. That's a smooth jazz voice.
Appreciate it. I wish I had time to respond to the sister who just called. Maybe another call. And I agree with some things she said, but I don't have the time, so I will stick with my topic, which is, which frustrates me. You just talked about the media in one sense, in terms of, Dr. King and Mandela. Mine is an Obama. Now, in a week that the unemployment rate went down and that the website is working better,
GDP's
I wanted to see
up.
If, yeah, exactly. I wanted to see if we had the same breathless every hour updates, you know, that with this development as they did when the website crashed and the unemployment rate, you know, stalled last month, et cetera, et cetera. And of course we didn't. And in probably the worst case of trying to, you know, did you see State of the Union where they, just before they get on the topic of the GOP's problem with, you know, speaking to women, they showed a couple of clips of Obama. Including him saying to Hillary that, you know, you're likable enough. And when he praised some woman, I forget her name, saying that she was the hottest whatever in the whole, you know, room, lit up and laughed. It was clear no one's insulted. So they were trying to say that those couple of statements he did is analogous to the GOP's horrific misogynist policies and statements that they've said over and over again. And I'm like, my jaw was dropped. I don't know why I keep getting surprised. Like, really, guys? I've seen things in the past where they'll show the Democrat do something slight. The whole Republican Party will do something horrible, and they'll say, see, they both do it. But that was really the nadir. I mean, really. So the president, you know, praising a friend in a joking matter about that she's hot, where she didn't, the whole room was just, you know, like he was Eddie Murphy or something. You're really comparing that to the stuff that the GOP does. So it's like, what in the world
that's
can
like
we do?
That's like opposing the Lilly Ledbetter Act. I know. I hear you.
Exactly.
But you know what? Can I tell you the good news about this? There is a good side to this, Kevin. As painful as it might be for you to see the media beating up on the president like this,
Hold on. Let me just stop. I don't mind criticism, but just nonstop illogical.
Oh,
ridiculous.
I agree with you. This false equivalency. I'm with you all the way. But here's the thing.
Right.
Number one, it's happening in the first year of a second term, so it's going to be forgotten by next year. Okay, the website, all that's going to be way in the rearview mirror. But the big thing this proves once and for all, and tell this to your right-wing friends when you see the media, they're turning on Obama for one reason. They're following polls. They're followers. And it proves the media is not liberal. If we had a liberal media, they'd cover an anti-war protest as much as they cover a Tea Party rally.
Right.
Our media is as liberal as the corporations that own it. And our media is really biased in favor of one thing, profit. I ain't saying that's bad. I ain't saying that's good. I'm saying that's how it is. So if beating up Barack Obama is good for ratings this week, that's what they'll do it. And even though it may be unfair, and I agree with you, if you sat these journalists down and said, hey, moron, do you want to bring back pre-existing conditions? They'd all say no. But they're doing their job, and their job is to get ratings. And it's proof that this myth of a liberal media in this country is exactly that.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we need to take a break here.
Hey, I thank you for the call, Kevin, and we'll be back with some important announcements and such, and your calls as well, for the next installment of The Stephanie Miller Show. Stick around through the break.
It's fun for ages 8 to 80. Join us.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Dressed in yellow, she says hello. Come sit next to me, you fine fellow. You run over there without a second to lose. And what comes next? Hey, bust the move.
Young MC, who yep. I believe is in his mid-50s now.
Yes. He's actually a fan of the show and listens to us on our Phoenix affiliate.
You know how much I love Young MC? When he had his he had a cameo, he plays himself in Up in the Air with George Clooney.
Okay.
And it's like the high point of the movie emotionally. It's awesome. And that's a great, great song that holds up really well.
It really does.
Yep. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Feuelsang, filling in for Steph all morning. I did want to point out the Rolling Stones got a Grammy nomination for Doom and Gloom, which is their best song in about 25 years. If you haven't heard it, it's like the greatest Rolling Stones song ever. And, of course, no one heard it. It got zero airplay. Yeah. But I offer them congratulations because, man, they earned it. It's a great tune,
good
and I'm
them.
Excited for the Grammys.
I saw them at the Staples Center.
Did you? How was it?
Yes, it was great.
Yeah, I saw the pay-per-view show last year. They're so great live, and you can't see them in a stadium. I'm sorry. You got to see them in an arena because Jagger's just, you can't be too far away.
And it was great to see Mick Taylor back with the band.
That's right. Yeah. Bringing the charisma. Yeah. And Jagger is just amazing live. He's 70 years old.
Yeah,
and I know 30-year-olds with half of his energy. I don't know how he does it. And that's the sound of my monkey, my
That was the most adorable thing ever on the radio.
My pet monkey is in the studio right now running around wreaking havoc like Curious George. Sorry. So it's been great filling in for Steph all morning. I do want to remind everyone that this weekend, I'm very excited, after a six-month hiatus, the Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour is finally returning with a very special guest to a very special city. Can I hear that promo?
Oh, hold on.
There we go.
In a world with Washington gridlock, Tea Party obstruction, economic chaos.
I'm sick of it.
There's only one way to get into the holiday spirit.
Stephanie Miller.
Let's kick back and get into the spirit.
Just in time for the holidays, the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour is coming to Seattle. On Saturday, December 14th, John Feuelsang, Hal Sparks, and your favorite progressive radio star, Stephanie Miller, will perform live at the Paramount Theater in Seattle, Washington. Tickets are available at stgpresents.org. Come celebrate Christmas Hanukkah, Stepha Kwanzaa.
The war on Christmas was worse than you thought.
That's the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour, December 14th at the Paramount Theater. Get your tickets now. Go to stgpresents.org.
Woohoo!
Fantastic. It's going to be a great show. If you have a liberal you love in the Seattle area, I can't really think of a better Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or pagan gift you can give them. Because this show will be Hal Sparks, myself, I'm doing all new material, Stephanie Miller, and our special guest, the one and only Mr. Dan Savage. It's going to be, my God, it was so crazy last year. It's going to be really, really wild.
How could it possibly get better with Dan Savage there?
Well, actually,
Jim Ward.
That's right. The one and only Jim Ward will be a part of the show as well.
Doing something.
Jim, you got to call. Jim, you have to call me today. I want to talk to you about that. I'm very excited to get you on stage. I'm like a scheming little elf. And Rocky Mountain Mike and a few other Stephanie Miller Show favorites will be in attendance and making appearances as well. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And it's the last show of the year. And it's really the first show of the new leg of the tour. We are announcing a number of dates for 2014. It's going to be a huge, aggressive show. Stephanie Miller is committed to turning the house blue and will be doing anything she can to make that happen. And will be coming to a town near you with some very, very special new guests joining the tour. So it's a great time to be liberal. And don't forget, Sexy Liberal does refer to our audience, not to us. So come on down. And I do want to give a couple of other Grammy nomination shout-outs for some good music got nominated. David Bowie's up for a couple of awards for Rock Performance and Best Rock Album. Hmm. Led Zeppelin's up for their live album Celebration Day. Neil Young is up. And, Rolling Stones. But I have to give a special shout-out to Paul McCartney because he's nominated three times for three totally different incarnations of Paul McCartney in one year. Hmm. His jazz film, Live Kisses, is up for Best Music Film with Diana Krall. His duet he did with the surviving members of Nirvana, Cut Me Some Slack, a great song, is up for Best Rock Song. And his Wings reissue is up for Best Box Set. So
awesome.
Go, Paul.
Wow.
And go you for listening to the Steph Show. Chris and Jim, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for coming in at the last minute.
Always a pleasure. It's the best show on radio. Awesome. I love being a part of it. I'll be on the Ed Schultz Show tomorrow and the Katie Couric Show on Thursday. I'm John Fugelsang. I thank you all so much for welcoming us, and go have a great Monday. Have a great week, everyone. Guys, I'll talk to you soon.